Chapter 2, Consciousness, Eternity, and Universal Mind. We are on a quest to discover if a source field really does exist. And our investigation is starting to uncover surprising information. Dr. Cleve Baxter's research gives the compelling suggestion that all living things, bacteria, plants, insects, animals, birds, fish, and humans, are in some form of constant communication with one another. This communication involves the use of a field that is not supposed to exist, because it cannot be found in the conventional electromagnetic spectrum of visible light, radio waves, infrared, microwaves, X-rays, and others. Furthermore, Baxter is only one of a variety of hypnosis researchers who have discovered that we can become completely unaware of signals in our environment if we are simply told, while in trance, that we will not be able to see or hear them. If all living things are sharing a constant psychic attunement with one another, perhaps our minds deliberately screen out most of this information for our own sanity. In Mexico, there lived a remarkable female healer known as Pachita, born Barbara Guerrero, who was a practitioner of psychic healing. Pachita discovered in childhood that she had a profound healing ability and practiced it on animals while she worked as a high-wire acrobat for the circus. She later fought alongside Pancho Villa as a teenager, sang in cabarets, and sold lottery tickets before recovering her abilities as a 30-year-old housewife. For the next 47 years, she strictly avoided publicity as she practiced her skills and helped many different people with seemingly incurable medical problems. Only in late 1977 did she become open to the idea of her talents being scientifically studied and asked Dr. Andrea Puharich to investigate her psychic healing powers with a team of specialists from the United States. Carla Ruckert wrote firsthand of her healing treatment from Pachita in The Law of One, Book One. In late 1977 and early 1978, we accompanied Dr. Andrea Puharich and his research associates to Mexico City to investigate a Mexican psychic surgeon, a 78-year-old woman called Pachita, who had been practicing for a great many years. Pachita used a very dull knife with a 5-inch blade. She passed it around amongst the entire research group, watching to see our reactions, especially mine, since I was the guinea pig. Since her operations took place with me lying on my stomach, I cannot give a first-hand account of what occurred, but Don informs me that the knife seemed to disappear 4 inches into my back and was then moved rapidly across the spine. This was repeated several times. Pachita was, she said, working on my kidneys. Again, we made no attempt to conserve evidence as we knew that it would come to nothing. Many have attempted to research psychic surgery by analysis of its products and have found either inconclusive results or null results, indicating that psychic surgery is a fraud. I was definitely curious about what this actually felt like, so that was the first thing I asked Carla when I interviewed her. Apparently, the procedure did cause her very significant pain. She also said there was some blood, even though the wounds miraculously closed up as soon as Pachita withdrew the knife. I'm aware this sounds crazy, but it was all witnessed by a room full of trained scientific observers. Dr. Puharich also received a treatment from Pachita for progressive hearing loss in both ears due to otosclerosis, excess spongy bone growth. Pachita apparently stuck the tip of her blade right into each of his eardrums for about 40 seconds each, causing him extreme pain. But the wounds then immediately closed up and there was minimal bleeding and no additional pain. Though this knife trauma should have caused him permanent hearing loss by any conventional medical understanding, he was stunned by the healing results he then achieved. My head was ringing with loud noises. I estimated them to be at the level of a New York subway train, or about 90 decibels above hearing threshold. The noise was so loud that I could not discern speech of those around me. But I had no fear that I might be going deaf as a result of the procedure. Pachita gave me a tincture, contents unknown, and told me to put one drop in each ear daily. The head noises decreased about 10 decibels each day, and by the eighth day, post-operative, the noises had ceased. My hearing, however, had become so keen that telephone conversations were painful, and I had to hold the earpiece away from my head to a comfortable distance. This hyperacusia lasted for about 2 weeks. 1 month post-operative, I had normal pure-tone hearing in both ears. If Pachita was actually just a hypnotist, somehow inducing mass hallucinations, then apparently her treatments were still quite effective. Carla Ruckert described only the first of two operations she had from Pachita. The second operation was explained by Dr. Andrea Puharic in H.G.M. Herman's book in far more detail. 12 days after the aforementioned operation, Pachita was ready to perform the second operation. She had been able to obtain a human kidney from a post-mortem examination. It was brought to her placed in an unsterile jar, suspended in ordinary water, and was stored in a kitchen refrigerator. On the day of the operation, Pachita lifted the kidney out of the jar with her bloody hands. She then sliced it in two longitudinally, stating that she was going to transplant each half separately. Next, she plunged the knife deeply into one side of the back, twisted the knife around, and asked me to drop one kidney half into the hole. I was utterly surprised to find that the kidney in my hand was literally sucked into the body of the patient. When I palpated the spot where the kidney had been sucked in, I found that the tissue had closed immediately. There was no hole in the skin. It was awesome. In this manner, both halves of the kidney were transplanted. The entire operation lasted 92 seconds. 1 hour afterwards, the patient was able to stand. She slept well and was urinating normally some 14 hours later. After 3 days, she boarded a plane and flew home to the United States. Said the book's author, Andrea was convinced that Pachita's instant surgery was completely genuine and that no fraud of any kind was possible under his and his colleagues' scientific observation and documentation. Mexican neuroscientist enters the Twilight Zone. Whether or not these were actual surgical procedures, Pachita's work also had a huge impact on Dr. Jacobo Grinberg Zalberbaum, arguably Mexico's most controversial neuroscientist. In 1977, Grinberg took a teaching job at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, UNAM, in Mexico City, and produced a wealth of hard scientific data on the physiology of learning and memory, visual perception, and physiological psychology. That same year, Grinberg met Pachita, who completely transformed everything he thought he knew about biology, psychology, and medicine. Sam Quiñones described the effect Pachita had on Grinberg in a 1997 article. According to Grinberg, Pachita performed successful surgery without anesthesia, using a mountain knife. She replaced diseased organs with others that appeared out of thin air. Grinberg spent several months watching Pachita's operations and talking and traveling with her. He admitted that his descriptions of her operations sounded like ravings, but he insisted he'd seen them. According to this same article, Grinberg ultimately wrote 7 volumes on the shamans of Mexico and had gone deeply into this type of research by the mid-1980s. Puzzled by the feats he believed he had observed Pachita performing, he theorized that there must be a neuronal field, as he called it, created within the brain, which in turn interacts with what he called the pre-space structure, a field that all space, time, matter, energy, biological life, and consciousness emanates from, i.e. the source field. Here is how Grinberg explained it in his own words, which are admittedly technical. The pre-space structure is a holographic, non-local lattice that has the attribute of consciousness. The neuronal field created by the brain distorts this lattice and activates a partial interpretation of it that is perceived as an image. Only when the brain-mind system is free from interpretations do the neuronal field and the pre-space structure become identical. In this situation, the perception of reality is unitary, without ego, and with a lack of any duality. In this situation, pure consciousness and a feeling of an all-embracing unity and luminosity is perceived. All the systems that spiritual leaders have developed have had the goal of arriving at this direct perception of the pure pre-space structure. The science of consciousness that I would like to develop is a science that will try to understand, study, and research the above-mentioned ideas. Obviously, if such feats as Pachita's are even possible, very few people possess such abilities. In order to awaken the world to what our true potential might be, Grinberg knew he would need to start with something very simple and repeatable. His earliest experiments in this category began in 1987. Two people, usually a male-female couple, would sit and meditate together for 20 minutes to form a close bond with each other. They were then separated into two different rooms, each of which was shielded from any and all electromagnetic fields. Both participants' brainwaves would begin to noticeably synchronize, even while they were apart, and Grinberg could measure it on their EEG readouts. He also found that both hemispheres within each person's brain would show the same patterns, which normally only happens in deep meditation. Furthermore, the person who had the most coherent, well-organized brainwaves seemed to always win, exerting a greater influence upon the other. In 1994, Grinberg came up with an even more compelling way to demonstrate this effect. Most of the experiment was the same. Two people meditated together for 20 minutes and then went into separate shielded rooms. Now, however, he flashed bright lights in one participant's eyes, causing them to experience sudden shocks. Each time he ran the experiment, 100 different flashes of light were given at random. 25% of the time when he flashed the light in one person's eyes, the other person had a very similar brainwave shock at the exact same time. Grinberg's control subjects did not show any such connections. This was a stunning discovery, and the results were published in the prestigious peer-reviewed journal Physics Essays. A revolution in science seemed to be well underway. The source field was finally going mainstream in a rigorous, clinically verifiable fashion, taking Baxter's breakthroughs to the next level. This is when disaster struck. Shortly after the publication of his paper in 1994, Grinberg disappeared. He still has never been found, and there is even a Facebook page dedicated to tracking him down after all these years. His wife was seen a few times after his disappearance, the last time being in mid-1995, and her behavior indicated that she was extremely distressed about whatever had happened. Some people interpret this as a sign that she may have murdered her husband, but it is also possible that she was threatened that the same fate would happen to her if she didn't disappear for good. We will probably never know what happened, but we can safely add Grinberg Zelberbaum to the list of source field investigators who may have met with lethal threats as a result of their groundbreaking work. That certainly doesn't stop us from putting all the pieces together in this investigation.